Program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this hour of Focus 580, we will be talking about Georgia and the Caucasus. And our guest for the program is Levan Mikheladze. He is the ambassador of Georgia to the United States, also Mexico and Canada. And he is here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois. He'll be giving a talk on the subject U.S.-Georgian-Russian relations. That will be this afternoon at 3 o'clock in the International Studies Building, Room 101. That's on 910 South 5th. So I'm sure that people around the campus, if they're interested in attending, should feel welcome. He's been good enough to come and spend some time with us this morning to talk about his country, about relations between Georgia and the U.S. and between Georgia and Russia, and to talk some about some of the challenges facing the leadership of Georgia now in the years since the collapse of the Soviet Union. Our guest has been in the Foreign Service for some time. He served as head of the permanent mission of Georgia to the OSCE, that's the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. He also was the ambassador of Georgia to Austria, and by his academic training is a geographer. He has a PhD in economic and social geography from the Institute of Geography of the Soviet Academy of Science in Moscow. Questions certainly are welcome. Number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. At any point here, people have questions, they're welcome to call. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation.
So how does a geographer end up becoming a diplomat?
During the Soviet times, actually, I would say national minorities didn't have an access to the Foreign Service of the Soviet Union, Central Foreign Service, of course. And after the breakup of the Soviet Union, of course, we had to have our own national foreign services. So these newly created, newly established ministries of foreign affairs, they started to pick up people mostly from the academics with the knowledge of languages, countries. That's how I got there. Although, speaking about me personally, I was more interested and specialized in the Near and Middle Eastern countries. My interest was Iran, Afghanistan. I spent some time there. And my first foreign language is Persian. But then, life has changed my interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would like to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about Georgia today. We have now a government that has been in place for a little bit more than a year. Mm-hmm. The current president, Mr. Saakashvili, came into office in January of 2004 with very broad popular support. Mm-hmm. He was the leader of an opposition that had organized against the previous president, Mr. Shevardnadze. Apparently, a lot of people in Georgia were very unhappy about the government, about issues like corruption and incompetence. And Mr. Shevardnadze, who had been president for 11 years, the second president since the collapse of the Soviet Union, was literally swept out of power by a wave of popular discontent mm-hmm. about what had happened. Indeed, Mr. Saakashvili had the advantage of having broad popular support and also facing some serious problems with the economy, with the relationship with Russia, and so forth. What would you say that today are the country's greatest challenges?
Speaking domestically about the domestic politics, I think it's the reforming of the whole society. Mm. I'm glad to state that, in fact, we have the new government, the new leadership has invited young individuals with the Western education. Most of them, of course, have received the education here in the United States. And it's very important that they spent some time, they lived and were grown up in the societies with the rule of law, with the democratic institutions, and of course they can bring a very serious, very special message to Georgia about the democracy in general and rule of law. So we are, first of all, as I said, focused on the reforming the society. Then, as you said, the biggest challenge was, of course, corruption. And the new government is, this revolution happened, in fact, under this banner of fighting corruption. And they started to vigorously crack down on the both the government officials, former government officials, so-called untouchables, and also the criminals all over the country. In fact, they have liberated a number of regions from the criminals who were, you know, terrorizing the local population. And another big challenge from the perspectives of the domestic politics is fighting contraband, smuggling, which in fact was the, you know, sort of destroying the whole economy. We have already very good results. For example, the national income has been increased three times. We have tripled our budget. The government has paid back all the arrears which were, you know, accumulated during several years. I mean, the pensions and wages. Although I have to tell you that smuggling again remains a problem. Because unfortunately, Georgia today faces, we have two major black holes in the Georgian economy. I mean, first of all, the, you know, separatist regions, which are nurtured and supported from the Russian Federation. And still, the Georgian government cannot fully control the borders with the separatist regions. So the, you know, this smuggling contraband, it comes to the separatist areas, then it's, you know, spread all over the country. Mm-hmm. Speaking about the foreign policy, the major foreign political challenge is the Georgian-Russian relations, and I think we will have time to speak in more details on that. Mm-hmm. And there remain two major problems in the Georgian-Russian relations. One is the separatist regions, as I have mentioned already. And the support which comes. Russia is, in fact, the only country which supports the separatist movements there. And secondly, the withdrawal of the Russian military bases from the Georgian soil. Hmm. But otherwise, I have to tell you that we have developed, over the years, we have developed extremely good relations with all our neighbors. Traditionally, we had always very good relations with Armenia. We have excellent relations with Azerbaijan, and there is also a coincidence of our national interests in developing east-west energy corridor, bringing the Caspian energy resources to the western markets. We have very good relations with Turkey during this difficult years after the breakup of the Soviet Union. In fact, Turkey was the only country which allowed us to interact with the outside world. But the only big problem for us again remains our relations with the Russian Federation. We have also excellent relations with the European Union, but particularly with the United States. But we will talk on that as well.
Most certainly. One of the things that I'm just a little bit curious about is how people in Georgia these days think about Mr. Shevardnadze. As we'd said, that he was the after the collapse of the Soviet Union, he was the second president. He was had been the foreign minister of the Soviet Union. So of those people that emerged in leadership positions after the collapse of the Soviet Union, he would have been one that actually would have had some name recognition in the West. People mm-hmm. knew who he was. And he was in power for 11 years. And as we said, there was over that time great unhappiness with government corruption. And finally, the Rose Revolution comes in mm-hmm. 2003, and he swept from power. And then the following year, Mr. Saakashvili becomes president. How do people feel these days about Mr. Shevardnadze?
In Georgia, everyone knows the role which Shevardnadze played in the breakup of the Soviet Union, which was welcomed in Georgia, since it allowed us to bring back, to restore our own independence. The whole world also recognizes his role in the dismantling of communist system. Georgians also appreciate very much his role, which he played in the beginning of his leadership. I mean, he came back to Georgia from Moscow in 1992. And I think that he played really major role in putting Georgia on the political map of the world. And he created the basics of the Georgian state. Especially he was, particularly effective in fighting different militant groups, the criminal groups in Georgia. And he established the grounds for the Georgian national state. He also played very important role in developing excellent relations with the West in general, and particularly with the United States. But unfortunately, in the last years of his rule, the corruption became really rampant. It became overwhelming, and which was also reflected on the everyday life of the people, and that's why he started to lose the popularity. I have to mention that both the government, the then government, and the opposition behaved in dignity, in full respect to each other, in respect of the law, constitution. That's what allowed us to conduct the bloodless, non-violent revolution there, which was the major achievement, and another indication of the maturity of the Georgian society, the maturity of the democratic institutions there. I think that he lives there in Tbilisi, by the way, very close to the same compound where President Saakashvili is based, so he's now writing his own memoirs. So he still has a lot of respect there.
Yeah, I did read a story about him the other day complaining about his pension and not being able to pay his bills. Is he living in what we might call disadvantaged circumstances?
No, I don't think that. Of course, there are some problems sometimes from time to time, but in general, I think that he's happy.
As you mentioned, one of the very difficult matters that Georgia has to deal with is the relationship with Russia. And with the Russian Federation, but primarily here we're talking about Russia and the government in Moscow. And there are several things that you mentioned. First of all, the fact that there are still Russian military bases in Georgia. Now, I believe that the Russians have said that they have promised to withdraw their troops by sometime next year. At least I believe I read it. There was some agreement in 2006. Now, that may not be correct. How many Russian soldiers are there now in Georgia, and where are they?
The overall number of Georgian soldiers is about 3,000. Well, I'm sorry, Russian soldiers on the Georgian soil, it's about 3,000. We have 3 military bases actually in Georgia. One in southern Georgia, the territory which is inhabited mostly by Armenians. Another one is in Batumi, Port Batumi, in the Ajaran Autonomous Republic. Third one, and the most troublesome, is in Abkhazia, Gudauta. And then we have the headquarters of the Russian troops in Tbilisi, which is not called base, but actually it's a military unit there. As you said, Russian government, Russian Federation has promised to withdraw its troops, and we have an agreement it's a statement, joint statement of Georgia and Russian Federation made in Istanbul in 1999, which includes several clusters of commitments, of obligations. One was about the reduction of the overall numbers of the so-called treaty-limited equipment. The statement, I forgot to mention, that the statement is part of the Conventional Armed Forces in Europe Treaty, which establishes the territorial and national limitations for the five categories of the armaments. Heavy military armaments, and so one cluster of commitments. It was concerning the overall reduction of the overall numbers. The second one was on the withdrawal and closure of two military bases, one from Tbilisi, which has been implemented, and another one from Gudauta, which is, as I said, the most sensitive, since this base was directly involved in the they supported the separatist movement there, and they fought against Georgian army in 1992 and 93. Then we have another cluster of commitments on the withdrawal of Akhalkalaki and Batumi military bases. Actually, this is the commitment to reach an agreement with the Georgian side, which hasn't been reached. And Gudauta military base, which Russians have declared closed and withdrawn, actually, we are not sure that it is closed and withdrawn, because they don't allow the international inspection to go and verify it, the fact of the closure. That's what we are now focused on, in fact. One, to get the international inspection to Gudauta military base, and then to reach an agreement on the withdrawal of two military bases, one in southern Georgia, Akhalkalaki, and one from Batumi. You mentioned 2006. Mm-hmm. No, that's the... the Russians prefer that they have developed the complex approach to the solution of this problem, we have different duration for different bases for the withdrawal and closure. So they are promising, in fact, we have, at this stage, we are in the process of negotiations with Russians. They speak about 2009 for the complete withdrawal of the Russian troops, and 2008 for Batumi military base. But they put some other preconditions for the withdrawal, which makes us suspicious that this withdrawal will not happen, in fact, by the year of 2009. These preconditions and linkages make the implementation will make it extremely important and impossible. And first precondition is to start counting the duration after the treaty is first reached, signed, and then ratified by the Russian Duma, which will never happen. In fact, it may last years, as we have witnessed already with the Georgian-Russian framework agreement, and we have another case also with Moldova. As you know, they have in 1999 they have reached an agreement on the withdrawal and closure of the military bases and withdrawal of military ammunition, and they had to do it until the end of 2001. Now it's 2005, and the Russian munitions and Russian troops are still there, and they still play quite negative role in Transnistria problem of Moldova.
Let me introduce just very quickly our guest for this hour. Levon Mikheladze is the ambassador of Georgia to the United States, also Mexico and Canada. Has been for 3 years now?
It will be 3 years in June.
He's visiting here at the campus. We're talking about Georgia, relations between Georgia and Russia and Georgia and the United States, and questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. As you mentioned, one of the things that has been a problem within Georgia are separatist movements, particularly in these two places, in Abkhazia and in South Ossetia, both parts of Georgia that abut Russia. Along this very long common border between Georgia and Russia. And these have been going on for some time now, and the position of Georgia is that it's in case of Russian meddling, that they have been supporting these movements and have made those conflicts worse and made it more difficult for Russia, for Georgia, for the government of Georgia to deal with. Mm-hmm. What do you see happening? Obviously, the position of the government of Georgia is that Ossetia, Abkhazia are parts of Georgia, and it's your intention that they remain parts of Georgia. And yet there are these very strong movements there that I think the Ossetians have this idea that both North and it would join and become essentially one parcel of land with the North, and that it would be affiliated with Russia. And I'm not sure about what the Abkhaz have in mind. But clearly, Georgia sees this as part of Georgia and does not seem inclined to let them become independent. Autonomy might be something else. Mm-hmm. What exactly is the position of the Georgian government, and how do you see some possibility of these conflicts being resolved?
Yes, these are two major problems, so-called frozen conflicts in Georgia, and as you said, Georgia recognizes these territories to be part of the Georgian government. But it's not only Georgian government which recognizes the territories to be part of Georgia, but it's also the whole international community. And most interestingly, it's Russian Federation also, which officially recognizes and speaks about the territorial integrity of Georgia and non-violability of the Georgian borders. But actual things tell us different story. In fact, Russia is the only supporting power for the separatists. What is the actual situation there? In fact, we have problematic thing for us is that process of conflict resolution has been monopolized by the Russian Federation. And we have actually what you call the judge, jury, and execution, which is in the hands of these functions belong to Russia. Although formally we have the international mechanisms for the solution, but in fact it is again completely dominated by the Russian Federation. So Russians are mediators officially. Or facilitators, sometimes as they call themselves, they are peacekeepers. The peacekeeping operations, both in Abkhazia and South Ossetia, are 100% Russian. Although they call it the CIS peacekeeping operation, but it's fully, it's conducted purely by Russian forces. And then we all know that Russia is a party directly involved in the conflict, that's what worries us the most. Also, 12 or 13 years since the conflicts have been ended, since the ceasefire, Russia, this year showed that Russia is not simply able to solve these problems. And that's why we are trying to increase the international element in the solution of conflicts, to bring international players like the United States or the international organizations, the UN and OSCE. Unfortunately, Russia exercises also this, it exploits fully the right to veto or to block the consensus both in the UN and OSCE on the inclusion of invitation of new players there. And that's what needs to be changed. That's what we tried, here also in the United States and in Europe, to increase their visibility and their role in the solution of those conflicts. Yeah, since we have we have touched upon the peacekeeping operation, I like very much what one American analyst, Paul Goebel, said about the Russian peacekeeping, that the peacekeeping in the Russian interpretation means keeping, is interpreted by Russians as the right to keep this and that piece of land, which can't be tolerated, in fact.
Well, you're Georgia.
But, of course, Georgian government is ready to provide the highest level of autonomy, both to Abkhazians and to South Ossetians. But of course, we cannot agree to the. We can never accept the separation of those two territories from the Georgian state. Abkhazian. Mm-hmm. Their position is Abkhazian government. Abkhazian position is permanently changing. In fact, mm-hmm. sometimes they request the full. They ask for full independence. Sometimes they. Ask for the integration into the Russian Federation, which is actually happening. As for South Ossetia, South Ossetia is integral part like Abkhazia. It was always, I'd like to stress, it was always part of the Georgian state. And Ossetians started to migrate starting from the 17th, 18th century to Georgia, and then Bolshevik cartographers who created this, difficult, very complicated system of autonomies, autonomic republics, autonomic oblasts, autonomic okrugs, territories, and so on. They, in fact, created these time bombs in Georgia. And the Ossetians were granted the autonomy for their support for Bolsheviks, in fact, who fought against the democratic government of independent Georgia, and we don't think that their claim to be reunited with the North Ossetia, which never existed. There is one Ossetia in the North Caucasus of Russia, and of course there is no basis, no objective ground for the reunification of those two territories. Mm.
Let me ask you another question, because there are also yet another reason for some friction between, I think, the governments of Russia and Georgia has to do with Chechnya and the contention of the Russians that Georgia has given some shelter to Chechen rebels on the Georgian side of the border. And here, again, the Caucasus, you are living in a rather dangerous neighborhood, because there have been a good deal of tension in places like Chechnya and in Ingushetia and Ossetia and Abkhazia. It's a difficult place. Mm-hmm. And that there on around several of these issues, there has been, it has complicated very much the relationship between Georgia and Russia. What is the official position of the government of Georgia on Chechnya and the Chechen conflict?
We are, becoming, if we are not already, a civilized country. And, of course, we understand the importance of the international law. And we understand that Chechnya is part of the Russian Federation, and we would never support the separatism in the Russian Federation. This is the official position of Georgia. We do not understand the double standards of the Russian government. What I have in mind is the support of separatist movements outside Russia, in Georgia, Moldova, and some other places, and brutally, fighting fiercely against their own separatists. And you see what happens in Chechnya. And you said about the rebels, Chechen rebels in Georgia. Yes, we had a number of them. And they spoke even about international terrorists to be on the Georgian soil in the Pankisi Gorge.
Right.
You remember there was big noise 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
In 2002, about these people crossing the Georgian-Russian border, Chechen segment of the Georgian-Russian border, and based stationed in the Pakisi wars. But I'd like to underline that, in fact, this problem has been exported by the Russian Federation to Georgia. If you look at the map, I remember the military operation in Chechnya was planned and then conducted in a way that the Chechen Republic or Chechen rebels, Chechen fighters, were attacked from three sides, from the north, east, and west, leaving only one corridor to escape, and you know that's what happened. In fact, they crossed the Georgian border and came to Pankisi, which is a place where Georgian Chechens live. These are the people who crossed, who came after the first Russian-Caucasian War in the middle of 19th century. That's how they appeared on the Georgian territory, but they are very much Georgianized and very much integrated into the local society. So it was natural that they came to the Pankisi Gorge. They had relatives and they had friends there. We knew about the possible potential Russian reaction to this, to this fact of coming to for these people to come to Georgia, and I remember this happened in December of 1999 when these people started to move to Georgia, and in fact under the pressure of from the Russian Federation we have closed the border in December, high in the mountains, about 3,000-4,000 meters. And we had very unfortunate cases of, we had simply victims among the elderly people, women, children, I don't, and we simply were forced to, for the humanitarian considerations, we had to open the border. That's how these people came, appeared on the Georgian territory. And it's Caucasian, let's say, rules, traditions. Sometimes the families were accompanied by their, by men, and that's how the Chechen fighters also came to the Georgian territory. But with the international help. With the help coming, first of all, from the United States, Georgia conducted the unilateral anti-terrorist operation there. Although it's, again, very difficult to differentiate, to differ who is the terrorist, who is the fighter among the Chechen men. Russians consider all of them terrorists. We have worked very intensively with these people to leave the Georgian territory. And some of them were forced to leave, I mean the fighters. Some of them were asked to leave and they left. In fact, I can state that we have managed to clean this territory from the Chechen fighters. We have certain number of Chechen refugees there. They are registered by the UNHCR. They have these ID cards. They are under the full control of the Georgian law enforcement bodies. They are fully integrated into the local society. They work on the land. They don't have weapons. And it's really this place became really very transparent and, again, very much controlled by the Georgian government. Mm.
Georgia is in a difficult position in its relationship with Russia, as are the other countries surrounding Russia that had been part of the Soviet Union and were considered to be in the Russian sphere of influence. It was certainly very, very clear, going back a long way, that Russia considered Georgia and the other republics, the other Soviet republics surrounding Russia, to be, in effect, part of its defense structure as a defense against the Russian attack in the Russian homeland. Literally, the fact that they dominated those countries was considered part of their defense structure. And it is also, of course, very clear that the Russians still, to this day, still have that feeling that this is within their dominant sphere of influence, mm-hmm. and they want to continue to be involved in ways that they think benefits them. So this is something,
and don't care about the benefits of others.
as you would say, I wouldn't make a statement like that, but I can understand your feeling that way. And of course, the governments of other countries feeling the very same way. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that it must be very difficult living in the Russian shadow like that. And of course, that would explain why it is that you have said, and I'm sure that the government of Georgia feels that the relationship between Georgia and the United States is very important. It's an offsetting kind of relationship that allows you to help balance and deal with Russia. But, you know, having said that, again, going back to the relationship between Georgia and Russia, how does Georgia ever really get out from under that kind of pressure that comes from having this long border with Russia? And I would assume the fact that the Russians would really always feel that they had great interest in Georgia, and if they thought it was in their interest, they would be, mm-hmm. they would involve themselves. The government of Russia in Moscow would involve itself in Georgian politics if Moscow thought that it was in their interest to do so. I mean, mm-hmm. how does one ever get out from under that?
Yeah. Yes, I agree fully with you. Your philosophy, which you have developed. I think that, yes, so this is the major problem, the Russian approach to the so-called near abroad. And they perceive these countries as, again, their sphere of influence, their sphere of their domination. And if you analyze the history during the last decade of these countries, local developments and their relations with Russia, you will see that there is one major problem. That Russia simply cannot accept the sovereignty, independence, independent statehood of those countries. And this is the major problem, not only with the so-called near abroad, but also with the Russians have to a different degrees, but they have also quite difficult relations with the former Soviet bloc, the socialist camp countries. Mm-hmm. This still remains a very serious, major problem in our relations with the Russian Federation. How to change this? We think that actually in 1992, the true breakup of the Soviet Union, it didn't happen. Still, the shadow of the Russian domination is there and was there all these years. We have to get rid of it. How to do it? I think that this democratization, the new wave of democratization, democratic revolutions, which were triggered by Georgia in that space. Mm-hmm. The Rose Revolution, of course. And then we had, this about the latest developments in Ukraine, then Kyrgyzstan. Something like that happened also in Moldova. It's not really a revolution, but I think that there was the revolutionary change in their orientation in Moldovan perception of the Russian Federation and, the reorientation of Moldova towards the West. And I think that this process will develop, and I think that this the democratic values will become the way of life for all the republics surrounding Russia, which it's a biggest irritant now for the Russian Federation. It is perceived as something imposed by the United States and the West against the Russian Federation. Which is not true, of course. I think that it is very natural process, and that's how these countries see their better future, how to create a better life, to get rid of corruption, get rid of bureaucracy, bureaucratic autocracies, mm-hmm. and so on and so on. And that's why I think that this process will develop further in the future. Russia feels besieged. You know, it feels sort of surrounded by this democratic fire, and which is something very anti-Russian, something very hostile mm-hmm. towards the Russian Federation. There was a very interesting article of Zbigniew Brzezinski last week, I think, in the Wall Street Journal, where he speaks about two major tendencies in the former Soviet, in the Eurasian space, let's say. One is the emergence of geopolitical pluralism as a consequence of the breakup of the Russian domination in that part of the world. And the second tendency, second trend, is the emergence of a generation of young politicians who cannot tolerate. They hate the Soviet style of leadership there, and who see the possibility for the better future in changing, destroying the old Soviet system there. That's what will, and this is again the. I think that possibility of the same revolution happening in Russia is not high. Of course, I don't think that Russian society is ready for such. Although you probably have noticed in the U.S. and Russian media that everyone now speaks about the democratic possibility of the democratic changes in the Russian Federation mm-hmm. under the influence of those revolutions in Georgia and Ukraine particularly. They have all the youngsters, the young politicians, they started to establish the organizations like PORA in Ukraine or in Serbia, you remember, or Kamara in Georgia, who were very active really in fighting against the current governments. So where is the way out? I think that in developing this belt of democracies around Russia will help to develop democratic institutions, democratic thinking in the Russian Federation, and that's the only way out of the situation. That's what will help us to get rid of the Russian shadow, as you said. And I'd like to stress here that I don't really want to be perceived as someone very anti-Russian, and I have even some Russian blood in my vessels, And we have, of course, at the personal level, we have excellent relations. We have true love. We are, co-faithers, co-religionists. We are both Orthodox. There are a lot of cultural ties, still, scientific, I don't know. But the state policy is really very hostile and very, very destructive. Mm-hmm.
We are coming down to about our last 6 or 7 minutes in this hour of focus. Our guest is Levon Mikheladze. He's ambassador of Georgia to the United States, Mexico, and Canada. He's visiting here at the campus of the University of Illinois. We're pleased to have him here with us this morning. We do have a caller and would welcome others. We might get in one or two on the time that remains here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Here's a caller to talk with in Urbana and line one.
Good morning.
Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about the principal industries in Georgia, aside from the energy sector, and maybe also what other projects you think might be coming in the future in your country. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call.
So, major industry. Traditionally, Georgia was very good in food industry, agriculture, and agricultural industry. Georgia was the most popular touristic place, and which the infrastructure is today it's not in good shape, but although it's improving. But I think that tourism has enormous potential in Georgia. It's a rare combination of, I don't know, history, architecture, culture, nature, sea, mountains, sun, fruits. So I think that it is, and Georgia was receiving, having the population of 5 million, Georgia was receiving about 9 and or 10 million a year tourists a year. So I think that this is one of the most most prospective industries in Georgia. Then we, of course, we will. We see. I personally see, and I think that many Georgians share this view. Georgia has very natural function of being a corridor between the two seas, between Black Sea and Caspian Sea, and also between the East and West, Islam and the Muslim world and Christianity, I don't know, North and South. So I think that the transportation function, the communication function has enormous potential there, very good perspectives. I would limit myself with this. Mm-hmm.
There has been one of the things that that I'm sure has been very important for Georgia here within the last couple of years has been this major pipeline that you talked about.
Yeah, of course.
Bringing
Thank
oil
you for reminding.
Through from the east, from the Caspian, through Georgia, then into Turkey, and then as a way of getting it.
Yes. Yeah, these are, you know, two major projects which are the basis for the future development of this function which I spoke about. And I'm glad that in a couple of months, actually, we will celebrate the opening. We'll have the opening ceremony of the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline. Mm-hmm. Which is not pipeline itself. It's not just pipeline, but it's a basis also for the development of whole infrastructure. And I think that it is also very important in terms of developing diversified energy routes from the Caspian to the Western markets, to the Western Europe. Sometime next year, in the beginning of 2006, we will have the opening of the gas pipeline from Caspian to the, again, Aegean Sea of Turkey. And this will be very important events which will trigger also some other projects connected with the infrastructure. Mm. Since we have 2 minutes, I don't want to leave the studio without speaking about the Georgian-American relations.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Although we are very short in time, I understand, but
maybe
still I'll try
minutes.
To.
4 or 5 minutes.
First of all, I'd like to say that we have managed to develop comprehensive and very and unprecedented relations with the United States, which, you know, from the Georgian perspective may serve as an example of a true friendship and true love between, you know, one superpower on the one hand and weak, still, you know, quite small, weak, but democratic country on the other hand. And in fact, the United States support was absolutely vital during this year to strengthen our independence, our sovereignty. And it was really comprehensive. We had the financial aid. We had the support in developing our security structures, in the defense. Politically, of course, the U.S. was the most supportive in dealing with the conflicts in the international organizations. But the U.S. is the most supportive in Georgia's aspiration to integrate into the Euro-Atlantic structures, I mean NATO and European Union in the future. I'd like to mention also the so-called Millennium Challenge Account, the initiative developed by, introduced by President Bush to to select sort of pivotal countries with well-developed democracies and rule of law. And I'm happy that Georgia appeared to be one of those 16 in the beginning. Now it's 17 countries which were eligible for this financial aid. But we are also trying to somehow repay for the support getting from the United States in many ways. Again, first of all, reforming, as I said, of our society in general and the development of democracy, but also we are working hand by hand with the United States American soldiers both in Afghanistan and now in Iraq as well. And Georgia is one of the biggest contributors per capita to the Iraqi operation. Now, from the very beginning, we have deployed around 300 people, and they were based first in Tikrit, which is not the most safe place, was not the most safe place in the beginning, and then in Bakuba. But now Georgia is one of those very few countries which are involved in the protection of the UN office, newly opened UN office there in Baghdad. And we have 550 people they have arrived just last week, and they are, so altogether we have more than 800 to 850 people in Iraq. So that's a sort of expression of our own friendship towards the United States.
Well, we are at the point, I am sorry to say, where we're going to have to stop because we have used the time. However, I do want to mention for people who are here in and around Champaign-Urbana, where we are, that our guest, Levon Mikhailadze, ambassador of Georgia to the U.S., also Mexico and Canada, will be taking part in an open forum discussion talking about U.S.-Georgian-Russian relations. All of that taking place this afternoon at 3, between 3 and 4, and this is in room 101 of the International Studies Building, which is on South 5th in Champaign, 910 South 5th. And anyone who is interested in taking part in that should feel welcome to stop by. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot.
We appreciate it. Our program here on Focus 580, on AM 580, Focus 580, made possible by grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. A little bit later today, as part of the Afternoon Magazine, architecture critic Philip Noble will be joining us for the program. He's the author of the book 16 Acres, Architecture and the Outrageous Struggle for the Future of Ground Zero. And that is indeed a book about the great long debate and discussion about what to do with the former site of the World Trade Center in New York that was destroyed on September 11th, 2001. Celeste Quinn will be inviting your questions and comments on the subject as she talks with Philip Noble. That's following the 1 o'clock news. Later on, you'll get a preview also of this weekend's Boneyard Festival in Champaign County. That's all on the Afternoon Magazine. The show begins at noon here on AM 580. Coming up in the next hour of this show, we'll be talking about the ways that science can play a role in archaeology. And our guest for the program will be Garman Harbottle. He is a senior chemist at Brookhaven National Lab and for a long, long time now has been involved in applying science to issues of archaeology. And particularly, we'll be talking about the Vinland map. That's in the next hour. Right now, an update on the market, so stay tuned.
Agricultural programming on W.